Chapter 32. Planet Vir Afshar. Day 4 of Operation Mad Rush. 19 years after the Clone Wars.
Private Hazrim Namir had been in his bunk, disassembling and reassembling a DLT-28 blaster rifle, when word about Alderaan came down. It hadn't meant anything to him. Only the fact that Howl had announced it over the Thunderstrike's intercom indicated the planet's destruction was anything out of the ordinary. In the 2 months since Namir had joined Twilight Company, he'd seen weaponry that could melt gleaming cities into slag, fought beside more species than he could name, heard stories of a galactic empire that held millions of stars in its grip. If he'd been told that planets were a common casualty of war, he'd have believed it without a second thought. In the mess hall that night, however, he'd seen the bitter faces of his comrades and heard their stunned oaths. Whatever had happened, it was something new. "You said they'd bombed and gassed planets before," he'd asked Gadrin. "What's different about this one?" Gadrin had looked at Namir with his alien eyes and said,
"This is the difference between the hope of life and absolute death. Everything that was Alderaan is now gone."
He hadn't understood entirely, but he grasped enough. He'd seen the Malkanis and the Creed and others eradicated, purged until only the tattoos of the exile and the dead remained. Days later, when word came of the destruction of the Empire's planet-raising battle station, Namir was manning a trench in the honey fields of Vir Afshar. He heard laughter down the line, someone shouting, "They blew up the damn Death Star!" and the raucous cheers that followed. He hadn't shared in his comrades' terror and astonishment, but he shared in their joy. He was coming to know the people of Twilight Company. He had no stake in their war, but they deserved a victory. Vir Afshar fell to Twilight shortly thereafter. The boost in morale might have played a role, though the Empire's decision to burn the hives and abandon the world entirely probably had more impact. Namir took no special credit, though it was the first campaign in which Twilight permitted him command of a recon group. He'd felt the bounty hunter, Brand, observing him, second-guessing him from the shadows, as she'd been doing since Cor Levan. Either she didn't trust him, or she'd recommended him for the position and wanted to see the outcome. Maybe both. Regardless, the battle was won. Namir was alive. The orchards and hives of Vir Afshar belonged to the Rebel Alliance, whatever that meant. The evening of Twilight's triumph, Namir was on watch when Sergeant Fectron returned from scouting the nearest settlement. The creature passed him a report and told him to run it to Captain Ivan.
"Everyone needs to meet Howl sometime," Fectron said, shrugging his tendrils.
Namir didn't ask how Fectron knew he hadn't already met the captain. He felt confident the answer would be unsatisfying. Namir had seen Howl from afar once or twice, heard his rare declarations over the Thunderstrike's intercom, but all his knowledge of the captain came from the stories of his colleagues. The troops possessed a reverence for their commander, a faith in his decisions, unshaken by the actual outcome of battles. Namir had seen such reverence before, more than once. He'd felt it before, though he'd been barely more than a child then. It was strange to see veterans like Gadrin and Orokai acting like newly recruited Malkani clansmen. They might claim cynicism, yet they still believed in the myth of their commander. It would have bothered Namir more if Howl's grip on the company had been more demanding. But there were no rallies under his watch, no war cries in his name. He was the cornerstone of Twilight, yet asked the troops why they fought, and none would answer for Captain Ivan. So for 2 months, Namir had had the luxury of ignoring the captain. That was no longer the case. At the command tent, Lieutenant Sargon directed Mimir back along the tessellated papery walkway toward the clay hills of the Hive. He found Howl at the outer perimeter of the camp and handed over Fectron's report, explained that the scouting party had seen neither damage nor fortifications at the civilian settlement. The captain nodded, studying the report briefly, before looking back down the path. "Private Hazrim Namir," Howl said, enunciating each word as if savoring it. "Walk with me." He started moving without waiting for acknowledgement, and Namir hurried to keep up. At nearly a head taller than Namir, Howl forced a brisk pace. "The Song of Lejeune," the captain said, "has been rattling about my brain for the past 36 hours. He tapped his skull to emphasize brain. "I can remember less than half the lyrics, and the entire opera is banned by the Empire. I've searched and searched and can't find a single copy." Namir kept his face forward, his expression flat. "I'm not sure I can help with that," he said. No one had ever suggested the captain might be dangerous, eccentric at worst, but he intended to pick his way carefully through this conversation. In Namir's experience, power made men unpredictable. Howl gestured sharply, dismissively. "You're helping already. Nothing triggers buried memories like clean air and new perspectives. With any luck, I'll be recalling boyhood lunches with my aunts by the time we finish talking." He was grinning, though whether in humor or mere enthusiasm, Namir couldn't guess. "I hear good things about you, Private. Sargon informs me you keep saving the new recruits' lives. And those of some older soldiers, too." "I've been doing this longer than most of them," Namir said. "Still having trouble judging firing ranges, though. Not a lot of artillery on Crucible." "I'll let you in on a secret. It's a rare individual who can tell at a glance how close to the enemy he can afford to get. You've got the instincts. You'll pick up on the facts." "Yes, sir," Namir said. The walkway began to squelch underfoot as the landscape turned to yellow-gray clay. Howl looked about thoughtfully, as if assessing the hills for some hidden purpose, and slowed his pace. "We'll be leaving the system in a day or two. Given your experience, I'd like to hear your thoughts on what we should do in the meantime." It was a test, of course. The captain had no interest in the advice of a private 2 months out of Crucible. Namir saw no profit in games, however, and chose to take Howl at his word. "Threat seems pretty well contained. We could go hunting, but the enemy's on the run. No need to get our people killed backing imps into a corner. I'd say, keep it simple. The Thunderstrike is short on supplies, so we send a few squads to that settlement, grab all the food and equipment we can get. Don't think we'll see resistance." Howl began to laugh. Namir wanted a bristle, but the sound was too guileless, too warm to give offense. After a moment, Howl turned to him and grinned brightly. "That," he said, "is exactly the sort of fresh perspective that sparks neurons in a man's brain. I think I just remembered my first schoolyard crush. Pretty Twillet girl. Name of Iania." "You think I'm too harsh?" Namir asked, voice maintaining its even keel. He'd come to realize that the rebels really were convinced of their own righteousness, their claims to be fighting for the people of the galaxy. He hadn't expected their captain to share that particular delusion. Howl's voice became sober. "I think you misunderstand this war. Treating civilian settlements with respect isn't about mercy versus pragmatism. It's a precondition of victory, no more or less. Twilight Company is fighting a battle for the heart of the galaxy." His voice softened to a whisper as if he was sharing a secret. "For the spirit of every ordinary man and woman and Imperial stormtrooper. Stealing food won't help us win. Killing enemies won't either. Against might on the scale of the Empire, conventional victory is impossible. When our objectives become purely military, we've already lost the larger fight. It sounded like the contorted justifications Namir had heard inside the Creed. A philosophy meant to disguise its own hunger for war. Yet looking at Howl, Namir believed the captain was sincere. And somehow Howl had kept Twilight alive through conflicts that had decimated other rebel companies. He forced himself to smile. "Of course," he said. "No riling up the locals, then." Howl clapped him on the shoulder and laughed again. "Good enough for now. You'll figure out the rest in time."